You know, when I was looking at your bio, Luann, I have to admit, one of the first things that caught my attention, you share your home with a herd of javelina.
Javelina.
Okay. I had to look that up. I had no idea what that was.
Well, they have really long teeth.
They're a little like feral pigs.
They do remind people of them, although they're actually a rodent. And their teeth are about 6 inches long.
Wow.
So you really have to, you know, keep your distance. But they're cute because they always have two babies at a time. And they always follow the adults around. And then when they go to sleep, they lay down like, kind of like dominoes that have fallen over. They're all in a line, kind of leaning on the next one. It's really cute.
It sounds wonderful. Do they get into your garden or
oh,
yeah?
They eat the cacti. They eat the new flowers.
Well, I learned something new. Javelina. They're wonderful looking little animals.
But unusual.
Let's get down to business here. Congratulations. I was looking online and I see not only has Amazon pegged you as having a hot new release in poetry, and that's pretty cool, but you also have won some awards, New Mexico Arizona Book Award, a Best Poetry Book Award. So you're getting some notice here.
Yes. I was really grateful.
Yeah. And I've also seen that as a child, you wanted to be one of three things, author, actress, or archaeologist. It struck me that maybe poetry is at least two of those, if not all three. What do you think?
I think it's all three.
Yeah.
I really do. Because the archaeology is the research, mm-hmm. the curiosity, the drive to find out more. And, of course, when you read poetry, it's performative, like acting. So...
Okay, that's the part where I wasn't sure, the actress part.
And I'm not so sure that the actual writing of the poem itself may be performative.
Hmm.
Because when I write a poem, I don't pay a lot of attention to the boundary between fact and fiction. I start with an idea or a feeling or some images, and then it may change from something that, you know, was a true experience and may move on from there into the realm of fiction,
mm-hmm.
or it may be the reverse.
And writing was a promise you made to your grandmother.
It was. My grandmother herself was a writer. She always kind of thought of herself as the the Joe of the March Girls and Little Women,
mm-hmm.
because she had sisters that she thought were like Meg and like Amy, and she was the one that wanted to write. She was more of the tomboy. And when she was, when I was a little girl, she was writing little funny stories that would get published in Reader's Digest, in the Chicago newspaper. And then probably by the time I was a teenager, I think she had given it up. And when I was just out of grad school and starting to teach, she was in a rehabilitation nursing home for some surgery that she'd had. And she was feeling a little down at that point. And I was talking to her on the phone, and all of a sudden she said, "You're not going to give up writing, are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to try not to." And she said, "You promised me that you will never give up." So I promised her. And although, you know, I have the drive myself, you know, when you get those, you know, six rejections in a row, I think about what I promised my grandmother. I always, "Nope, Grandma, I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep on." And I'm glad I did, because I finally got my book published.
Is she still around?
She's not. She passed away 15 years ago.
I bet she knows, though.
I think so.
And Doll God took you about 20 years to write. Is that correct?
Well, when I left Western with my MFA, mm-hmm. I had every intention to, keep on writing my poetry and getting my first book out. But I immediately went into a PhD program, and that became not only very time-consuming because I was teaching also, but it, in some ways, ran counter to writing creatively at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't write very much for a while. And then my cousin passed away, and I was very close to my cousin, and it brought me back to writing poetry again. And it just meant that it ended up taking a lot longer for me to get that first book together. And I didn't even know I had a book until I was working with a mentor who's a wonderful poet. Her name is Caroline Goodwin. And she said, it's time. Put the book together.
Mm.
And that's when it occurred to me that I had the poems for a book. So I can thank Caroline for that.
They fit together very well. There's, I'll let you describe it. What is Doll God about? And of course, every poem can stand on its own, but there's very much a continuing theme through all of them, I think.
Well, I think one of the main things about Doll God is that I'm constantly examining something that seems to be two almost antithetical things, which is nature, and then creations that are created, by humans, works of the imagination, mm-hmm. which I see in myth, fairy tales, I see in art, but I also see in something like dolls. And so some of the poems actually examine both of the things together, nature and creations of humankind.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of them just kind of go off into one of those. But I think the whole book is taking a look at how our spiritual world is inhabited and showcased by both nature and creative art.
And, of course, dolls keep showing up in many of the poems.
Right.
And I understand you're a doll collector also.
I am now. I wasn't until after my daughter grew up and abandoned her dolls. And I took over the dolls that she had left. And then the collection built on that, in part because my husband loved to scour antique stores and flea markets for his own collections. And so I started looking for dolls while he was looking for the things he was interested in. And now I've got quite a collection. I've got certain focus on certain dolls, but got hundreds of dolls at this point.
Wow. Do you have a favorite, one that made his way into the book?
Well, I have quite a few favorites. Some of them did make their way into the book. One of my first... A doll that really captured my imagination when I was a kid was given to me by my paternal grandmother, my other grandmother. She was the head fitter at the 28 shop in Marshall Fields in downtown Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And she bought me a walking doll, which was a full-size doll the size of maybe a four-year-old child.
Mm.
And she made a whole collection of beautiful dresses and a velvet coat with matching cap. Just gorgeous clothes for this doll.
Mm-hmm.
She's ended up in the book because, of course, she's one of my earliest doll memories. And the memory of my grandmother so excited to watch me open the doll and the clothes.
Mm. How do your experiences at Western Michigan University add to becoming a poet? Were there any mentors here that moved you along that path?
I had some great mentors there. I had mentors in both the creative writing and in the English department. When I was at Western for my MFA, I had classes with John Wood, Herb Scott, Stu Dybeck. I was there just before they started bringing in the new people, quote. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful experience. But I also had scholarly mentors as well. Both Dr. Goldfarbs were very helpful to me, and many other professors as well. It was really a wonderful experience. And part of it was that I worked on my MFA and my MA at the same time.
Mm.
So I really was able to, you know, integrate the research with the creative endeavors. And I also did something typical of me, which is where I don't stick to one thing. And I actually left with an MFA that focused on both poetry and fiction.
So how is it that, is it fair to say that poetry is your niche?
Well, it has been, but I will say that I am publishing in both nonfiction and fiction at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Short pieces. I have one short fictional short story that just came out. I have another one that's coming out this spring. I've got several shorter nonfiction pieces that have recently come out or are forthcoming. I really enjoy not sticking to just one thing and being able to move between them. But I also think it's because I really like to explore that boundary between the genres.
Mm.
I'm working on a project right now that is trying to create the stories of the women in my family that have come before me, particularly the lost generations, great-grandmothers, great-great-grandmothers. And in doing that, I'm writing both flash nonfiction, you know, very short.
Right.
Nonfiction, some even a little experimental, and then prose poems and some more traditional free verse. And I want to put together a chapbook that moves across these genres.
Hmm, that sounds interesting.
Plus, you have to, you know, I'm researching the lives of these women, but there's so many gaps. There's so much that we can't know about what their lives were like.
Yeah.
So I have to imagine it. So, you know, I start with the seeds of fact that I learned from genealogical research and from the stories that I heard from my grandfather and my grandmother. But then I have to imagine everything that happens in between.
So what makes a poem or a piece of prose, what makes it good for you? And that is in reference to your own work or anybody else's?
Well, sometimes I read a piece and I feel like somebody slapped me upside the head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I read something and I get really jealous. Oh, I wish I could have written this. You know, when I have really extreme reactions to a piece, I know it's really amazing.
Yeah. What is your hope for the reader that you want the reader to take away from reading this collection of poetry? Is there a certain feeling or image or some lingering thought that you would love to have that reader take away?
You know, like a lot of poetry, there's a lot of poems that have to do with loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's lost, what's found, what's being searched for, what's been destroyed, can it be recovered? And, you know, I would like to leave the reader with the feeling that even though we all go through this, that very often what is lost can be found, even if it is in a different way than you expect it to be found.
I should have asked you this before, Luann, but by any chance, do you have your book nearby? I'd love to have you read a short poem for us.
I do.
Okay.
This is a prose poem called Waking Up. The bed folds around me, a clamshell closing on itself. The trigger hairs of the Venus flytrap tickle my arms. I escape, fighting the neckline of my nightgown, aiming for that flat patch of floor. The knot holes grow like nooses around each footstep. Running to keep from sinking into the pine plank stocks, I head to the kitchen and the first cup of tea. The rising steam entices me until I am Alice, swimming for my life with no way to climb the slippery ceramic sides. Rounding the perimeter, I can't tell when I'm trapped in the endless loop where nothing begins or ends unless I give in. A single fly on the centerpiece takes flight, releases a dry straw, which flutters into the cup and allows me to climb out. I look back at the red-gold circle inside the white and notice how the steam has disappeared. Making my bed, I see how flat it is, like the floor, two in a series of angled planes in the house. Round eludes me, and I hunt for it now, no longer fearing its vitality. The cat lies a pinwheel inside his basket, the pulsing at its center. The rock outside, where the lizard performs his push-ups, thrums. Soon, crockpot sizzles with chicken, basil, wine. My neighbor's belly shifts 8 months along. The fly lands between us, watching with its large, round eyes.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Luann.
Thank you very much. And I have a blog called The Family Kalamazoo, which is about my genealogical research. I've been doing a lot of genealogical research on my family, especially my mother's family from Kalamazoo and Caledonia and Grand Rapids in Kent County. I have a blog where I post stories about my research, old photographs, including antique photographs of my relatives. It's called The Family Kalamazoo at thefamilykalamazoo.wordpress.com. And some of the information and the stories that I share on here are what I use to pull from to create the poems and flash nonfiction for the chapbook I'm working on.
You'll have to come back and talk with us when that's finished. That sounds fascinating, too.
Well, I think it's great for the community there. I had no idea until I started doing the research how involved in the community my family was.
Mm.
My great-great-grandfather, for instance, was the head brick contractor of the KPH water tower.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, just little, and also, you know, built a lot of the buildings downtown that mostly have all been torn down now. But, you know, you don't know this stuff when you're growing up.
Right, yeah.
Your parents forget to tell you those things.
Or they think you've got it just by osmosis or something.
Right, exactly.
Are you planning any visits back to the Kalamazoo area?
You know, my father just passed away in May, so
I just
made a lot of visits to Kalamazoo. So now I probably won't for a little while because my mother's here for 2 months, and I had just made all those trips there when my father was sick and, you know, back for his funeral and then to visit my mother afterward and everything. But but then I will again because you can take the girl out of Kalamazoo, but you can't take Kalamazoo out of the girl.
Oh, yeah. I've tried, and same thing happened.
I don't know what it is, but
it's a great place. It is.
I've
been out to Arizona and New Mexico too, and I'm not normally a warm weather person. I actually prefer the north, but that is a beautiful area.
It is. It's beautiful. It's different. I do miss the green. I miss the snow, but you can't have everything.
Yeah, or not
memories,
at the same time.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Luann. I'll be in
touch
again.
Thank you, Zinta. I really appreciate it.